I let me hit record too, so I can do a backup recording in case something happens.
Cool.
Belt and suspenders. So before we started recording, we were talking about things that we're not proud of. I don't know if that's a topic.
Things we're not proud of. Yeah.
No, not to say that we should talk about the things we're not proud
of.
No,
yeah, that's cool too. I think another angle on that is just, I don't know, accepting how we grow and change, right? Mm-hmm. There's along the lines of thinking of, things we're not proud of. I mean, there's things that I'm actually totally neutral on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things that, let's see, I don't know if, what the hell, right? I mean, so being a young, young teenage boy, I mean, I don't know, well, not now, right? I'm not currently a young teenage boy. Quite the opposite. Well, not quite opposite, but you know what I mean, right?
Right, right.
And I was actually thinking of this and trying to make a recording for the Polytechnicast out of it, but let's see. I think it's probably not that appropriate territory. Basically, I had posters hanging up in my room that I wouldn't currently have hanging up in any rooms.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like a very, attractive females and stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway. And you mentioned belt and suspenders. There was one that involved, suspenders, and bikini bottoms.
I know what you're talking about.
Anyway.
Bud Light.
Exactly. I'm many years away from consuming beer. I had a giant Heineken bottle that was a piggy bank as well. Very classy. I don't know. It's funny. Like, I think about how my tastes have grown and changed. And I've gone through phases where I'll look back at like some of the things I've made or created and whatnot. I've gone through like kind of judgmental phases, right? Where thinking like, oh, that's just so bad, or this is so terrible. And I think I'm reaching now like a different, more, just a more accepting phase, just seeing how like, those are just stages of development. I mean, those are, speaking, some of the choices and things I surrounded myself with were speaking to stuff I was learning about at the time and going through. And how can that be completely bad or stupid or silly?
You know, I it's well documented my feelings about life having a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about this kind of stuff, I think about like whenever somebody like they grow up, and this is one of the things that I bristle at, is when they grow up and they forget that kids stuff is supposed to be for kids. And so then mm-hmm. they're like, why are kids so dumb? Why do they like this dumb stuff? All these dumb shows like Teletubbies and whatever. Oh, kids are stupid. I wasn't that stupid when I was a kid. Yeah, you were. But and another thing, kids aren't stupid. They just have a different developmental point of view, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so like when, I mentor teenagers, I teach teenagers, and I take on, teenaged interns, and inevitably we wind up getting to talking about their lives a little bit, when they're talking about what art school they want to go to, the mentorship kind of questions that you get. And it's like this one young lady was talking about how she was nervous about going out of state and going on her own, and she's like mm. What if I make some bad mistakes? What if I go in the wrong direction with my life? And I was like, this is the time when you're supposed to do that, isn't it? Isn't this the time you're supposed to like kiss the wrong person, try out the wrong thing, do some things that you years from now you're going to be like, oh, I was so dumb. This is your time to do that. So yeah, it's like you should still be nervous. Caution is a good thing. But anyway, my point is that, mm-hmm. Teenagers, when you're at different ages, you are appropriately making appropriate mistakes most of the time, right? There's always exceptions.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, yeah, I look back on that, and especially when I'm dealing with teens now, it's like, and they're interested in things that I couldn't possibly care about, they're obsessed or frustrated with things like, oh, this girl on Tumblr doesn't like the actor in this werewolf movie that I like, oh, I hate her so much, that kind of thing, which,
wow.
To, yeah. from our perspective,
I'm old, yeah, like I'm laughing at myself as you. My reaction to that, I'm laughing both at the thing and at me.
And at you, exactly.
Because, man, wow, am I, the miles between there and here.
Well, and you remember those days when you were that.
Oh yeah.
You know, wound up about such weird things.
Exactly.
So yeah, like when I'm dealing with these young people who are talking about these things, it's not, I never do the you kids are so dumb. All the things you like are dumb. Because this is the time for them to act. Because
that was always fun when you were that age too, right? When you had the blunt disaffected and uncaring and dismissive adult that just mm-hmm. said, "Well, you're just dumb."
Yeah. Welcome to the real world, son, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you know, it's like I try to engage with them as best I can on that subject, or at least express amusement at their frustration, right? Mm-hmm. But never like that dismissive, like, you know, you're dumb, you'll get over it kind of thing, because I went through that, you know? And that has made me more aware of and more sympathetic or empathetic to the periods where I did dumb things. I don't look back anymore and go like, "Oh, such an idiot. Oh, look at that haircut." It's more like,
"Oh man, yeah. 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 I've had hair issues."
The period you grew up in, that doesn't surprise me. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a can of hairspray in your repertoire at one point or another.
You know, I was really picky about mousse, and hairspray happened once in a while, but it was really about the mousse. And the mousse having the special, you know, the right qualities, you know.
Studio from L'Oreal?
Oh, man, I'm thinking of, what was it, Extra Hold from, it had a little kangaroo on the...
Oh, Aussie.
Aussie, yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's when I had my own job, I'm like, I buy the good product now. Get that can of mousse, and then, yeah.
I like that's how you treated yourself. It's like, "Rob, you're getting pampered today.
I'm getting the good mousse." Yeah. So
anyway, that was a long way of saying that, yes, I think the larger theme in there is that forgiving your past selves and forgiving your past work, the stuff that you make, you know, it's like this is another common, this is like an easy drum to beat is that, "Oh, don't look at my old stuff. It sucks."
You know? Oh, yeah.
It's terrible. I don't want anybody to ever see it because it's so embarrassing for people to see my old bad stuff.
Yep.
You whatever age you were, that was when you were beginning. And it's appropriate that your stuff should stink when you begin. You know, if you came into it and you threw down your first lines on the paper and you were amazing at it, then you're a monster. And get off my planet.
Have I encountered anything like that? I have. I mean, in some ways, sure, but never. Yeah, not the instant success, but yeah, I definitely ran into some people who were just pretty darn incredible in art class. Mm. You know,
but never like, "Oh, this is my first time."
Right? No. Yeah, I mean, I knew some. Yeah, knew some really incredible guitarists, knew some really incredible visual artists that. And they were always like the measuring stick for me, you know, where I was like, "Wow," you know, like the amount of, there was a girl, I can't remember her name, but yeah, she was a few grades ahead of me in you know, like drawing class. And I just, yeah, I mean, her work had so much contrast, and she could do photorealistic anything. And it just, yeah, it would always amaze me, but it became like, now that's possible. Now I know. I can work on that too.
Did you see that post that Luis Escobar posted on his blog? I think today or yesterday.
You know, I saw today. One fly by on the Google Plus, but I didn't read it yet.
Yeah, a lot of information flies by our radars on a daily basis. So yeah. You know,
did it have to do with your friend artists or something? Okay.
Today being Thursday, January 24th, 2013, when we're recording this, so people can go look through his archives. Maybe we can put it in the show notes. So Luis did a... What's so funny?
Nothing. I was just actually picturing, due to our prior conversation. Now, we actually we premeditated this back in the late 80s, and it's on VHS, and we digitized it for you. Right.
That's right.
This is all forethought.
Yes, we both have giant hair right now.
Yep.
I wish. But... So Luis posted this blog post with a video about you are, he's quoting somebody else, I forget who, but you are the average of the five people you talk with the most in terms of intelligence, skill, talent, general themness, right? Now, I haven't put a whole lot of thought into it. I haven't put a whole lot of investigation into this idea, but it sounds plausible, right? It seems like you would probably, the people you run with the most would rub off on you. I can at least report that in periods of my life where I found myself spending more time around a lot of sourpusses,
mm-hmm.
I tended to have more negative thoughts. That's anecdotal. That's not real evidence. But what one of the points he makes in there is that in order to get better as an artist, then you should hang out with better artists. So, and I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of ways. There are plenty of different art sources that cite how, I mean, in a way, like when you start thinking about, well, originality and where do our ideas come from, what informs our art, and it's the kind of things that we surround ourselves with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so yeah, a lot of artists can be informed through really personal pains and whatnot, and others can be really informed by some subject matter they're totally obsessed with, and you know, or their relationships. And so I think it's a combination of what you surround yourself with, but I can easily see how that makes sense, and how it would be very influential the kind of artist you're relating to.
Mm-hmm. And it also speaks to a different viewpoint on what you want out of your work or what your approach is to your work. Because I knew kids when I was growing up who wanted to be the big fish in the small pond, right? They're the you know, head honcho of this little clique of people, right?
Right.
And it's great for them because they're not being challenged by anybody. They get to, you know, be the big boss of this little group. And then the idea of edging out of that territory is terrifying to them, because what if they find out they're a small fish after all? Whereas the flip side of this, of hanging out with artists who are better than you, the standpoint is the person who is the eternal learner. Like, what can I learn from this? I don't care if I'm the top dog or not. I'm just in it to play, right? The difference between going for the winning point and enjoying the actual game of it all, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that is really interesting. Big fish, small pond. I mean, so maybe I wonder if that has to do with, it's like you're comfortable with, it's looking at the two directions of both being reflective or looking forward, right? Where are you comfortable with where you're going and what you're about to do? And are you comfortable with where you've been? I wonder how related those two perspectives are, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. You're piecing together the theme today.
Yeah.
Do you have to be comfortable with where you've been in order to be able to move forward? I would guess so, because, I mean, if you spend a lot of time, you know, having hang-ups about things.
I personally, it's been very distracting for me at times. Mm-hmm. I without a doubt. I've documented plenty through the Polytechnicast, facing issues with perfectionism. That's just the symptom, right? It's not, you know, like labeling something perfectionism and saying, oh, I'm not finishing my projects and stuff. That's the surface, right? I mean, you have to, you know, looking more at like, well, why? It was, really had to do with more of not being just comfortable with where I was at to express myself based on what I currently knew, because I, you know, was always afraid, you know, like convincing myself to be afraid of what would be, you know, like who would be judging me for where I'm at, which is real. Oh my God. I just saw this. Speaking of that, I just saw, Indie Game, the movie. Have you seen that, Jersey?
No, I haven't. I'm writing it down.
I have seen, write it down. I've seen a movie you have not seen. This is probably
not for long.
Yeah. Really interesting show, and there's one of the people in there that was tough to watch in some ways, because
I have seen this.
Oh geez. Of course.
is this That's the guy who's like during the launch of his game, he's like watching Twitter and he's watching Facebook and he's like saying out loud, why am I doing this? Why do I care about this? Why am I paying attention to this?
There's two of them. Two guys in particular that were having one was semi-solo. He changed business partners partway through the process.
And yeah, he got screwed over big time by a bad business partner, and as somebody who's been skunked on a deadline by a creative partner before, I felt that guy's pain so bad. Even Anne, when she was watching with me, she looked at me, she's like, that guy's talking like you were talking that night.
Oh, funny. Yeah.
Because I think he even says like something like, if he shows up, I will straight up murder him. He says that in the film.
Yeah, it is funny. Like, it is really an emotional process going through developing something of, I don't know, any kind of long-term creative project, and especially when you get tied into, partnering with anyone on it. And
but I derailed you, Rob. I'm sorry. We were talking about Indie Game the movie. We were talking about...
No, watching him reminded me of like, let's see. I really think it's cool when people can journal like what he was comfortable with sharing on that film, right? Mm-hmm. So all sincere respect to the guy's name who I'm embarrassingly forgetting. He's the author of, or one of the creators behind Fez, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what is his name?
Which was released, I believe.
Yep, on Xbox Live, and it's due for other platforms this year. Phil Fish, there we go. Oh, okay, so Phil Fish, and he was a really high anxiety kind of dude to watch.
Yeah.
And at times, like, I've been bound up and wound up pretty bad like that. And it's really interesting the kind of boxes we can put ourselves in, and I've found that as I've been dealing with my hangups, I've become more comfortable looking back and looking forward at different things. For instance, I have started making a new game, and I am just cruising along. You know, I who knows how long it'll take me. I'm not making promises, but I hope it'll go a lot quicker than Guitar Fretter. And Guitar Fretter was a big personal victory for me as well.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
How does describe, if you can, how working feels different having gotten comfortable with your past? No, you know, and let me just say, like, that sounds like hyperbolic. It sounds like you're comfortable with your past. Like, oh, you've reconciled all of these terrible things that happened to you.
I'm meditating right now while I'm cross-blocking.
What I mean is like everybody has a thing that they look back on like, oh, I wish that did. I wish I didn't do that. I wish that didn't happen. I wish somebody didn't say that thing. And it's a real quick version. The two Buddhists, the girl, the river, that story, right? Become okay with whatever things you were uncomfortable with in the past, how does that change the way work feels? Does it feel any different to you?
I feel less distracted and like I can express myself and have less concern about what happens before and after.
What do you mean, what happens after?
What happens after as far as, for instance, like internal monologue type stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like stressing out about, will people understand? Will it make someone mad? And all that kind of stuff. And so who knows? Like, I might actually make creative stuff. Who knows? Like, I might go, gory, sexual stuff. I might get blue. Who knows? Watch out. Like, I'm getting unchained.
This is 2013, Rob, everybody.
That's it. I don't know. Who knows? No, some of that stuff. Yeah, it would take me. Who knows? I doubt it. Like,
but you've been liberated.
But yeah, exactly. I feel, liberated, less panicky.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. So I made a reference earlier to in Indie Game the movie, that scene where, was it Phil Fish? Is that how you say his name?
The creator of Fez, and then there was one of the guys who made Super Meat Boy, the two partners. It's funny because actually I'd met the one dude. I was at the GDC when he was him and his future wife were they submitted the game Gish. It's when I made the game I made, Jinhanu, did not make it into the finals, but I did travel there anyway.
So wow,
yeah.
That film must have been more of an emotional roller coaster ride for you than I bet for me.
Like Indie Comic the movie. Then,
yeah, as a cartoonist, I was watching it with a lot of empathy. Although, fortunately, in cartooning, there are very few things like an expo where you're competing to get the top slot in order to be able to get funding and so on. But anyway, where I was going with this is, you talk about feeling liberated. You talk about not worrying about what happens before or after the creative act. that scene that haunts me in Indie Game the movie is when Phil Fish is sitting there upon release of his game, and he's looking at his phone, and he's checking Twitter and he's checking Facebook to see how many likes it got, how many retweets he got, and he's saying with this kind of almost like just wet brown bag sagginess to him of, why do I even care? Why am I doing this? You know, he can't stop from doing it, but he acknowledges the fact that this is a pointless activity, but he can't help it because he poured so much of himself into that game and worked so hard to make that threshold, right? But that's somebody who's, you know, kind of ensnared in that whole...
Well, it's hard. And like part of that's how we're wired too. And I think so some of it's like studying and becoming more comfortable with my own quirks and foibles and all that stuff. And the creative process. And also part of my discipline that I study is the whole, well, the anthropology and psychology aspect of being people-centric and what causes people to decide things and all that. And so it creates some clarifying moments for me sometimes where I look at like, man, I think I am clearly not being rational right now, but I've had emotional hang-up about this thing that's really resonating with me. And so like there's a and our brain rewards us for the three different areas of cognition as far as like dealing with things on the primal level, dealing with things on the rational level, and the emotional level. And so things can hit you on any of all three or just one or all together. And so like the I think there's a lot primal going on when you're like you make something and you share it with the world and you're like, recognize this, I'm valid, I am, this is part of me, and share this moment with me and all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, it doesn't have to be all about that. I mean, you can have a longer term payoff, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be paying off right now, but you could easily succumb to the, all wound up in the moment. I need some kind of resolution here. I need some kind of hit, some positive feedback, the dopamine. Give me some.
I like that you're careful enough to say that this is a perfectly human thing to feel and not totally something that we need to like beat down and conquer.
I am so not trying to turn Phil Fish into a rodeo clown.
Right. Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. No. You know, it's like, no, it's if anything... When I watch that scene, the reason it haunts me is because it is so emotionally raw and so resonant with something I think anybody who creates goes through over and over and over again.
Yep.
And it's inescapable. No matter how much success you or lack of success you encounter, I have friends in the industry who, you know, are more well-known than me and way more well-known than me. And, you know, like some of them, I talk to them and I'm like, oh, you're still not satisfied. And it's not that they're miserable people. It's that they're going through that same cycle that we go through, like you described, where it's a primal thing. You invest yourself so much into this thing and you need that reflection and validation, or you crave it. Maybe you don't need it, but you crave it.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
And that's perfectly human. But the trick is, I think, not to squash it or conquer it or obliterate it like some kind of Sylvester Stallone sweaty-chested character, but rather to reconcile oneself to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I go back and forth because, you know what? I get high on Dragon Ball Z, and, you know, I get pumped. I use the pumped talk on myself sometimes, and you know, I just try not to overuse it and whatever. I accept that that's one of my quirks, right? I mean, it's interesting. We can overly use or lean on to, you know, solutions that have worked for us, and then that's a quirk, right? So I'll.
It worked last time.
Exactly. And so sometimes it will work, sometimes it won't. And sometimes I notice like I feel like a caricature of myself, right? Where it's like, oh, this is just stupid, you know? Take a step back and maybe hit it from a different angle, or you know. It's But at the same time, I've noticed that can work too. So like maybe Phil Fish getting all worked up gets him into his best performance.
Yeah.
Like he gets deep insight and who knows? Maybe that's why he's so very, has a very developed set of capabilities about being overworked up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right. We don't know. That's the part to underline, but it's worth thinking about. And I think that sort of attentiveness is the lesson.
Hmm.
There you go. Here ends the lesson.
Exactly.
Pay attention.